Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your outpost for the week is freshly delivered. I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is always, the wonderful and talented, fantastic and brilliant, Drea Kaufman.
Hello, everyone.
Well, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great. Doing great. One of the things is that, I'm really kind of excited because we got a brand new review on iTunes. I saw that.
Yeah. I'm so excited.
So just wanted to say a quick shout out to our latest reviewer and really appreciate you going and spending the time on there. It's Shan MD, and they said that they really are enjoying it. They love our analysis. They did want us to maybe weave some more plot points into the later novels when we could. They did mention that they didn't think that, you know, listeners were reading the series for the first time. But I will say to you, Shan MD, that I legitimately know a friend of mine right now, and it's her first time through this series, and she's listening to the show. So that's one of the things that we have to keep a balance on. I know sometimes it's hard for us, but we try and do the best we can. So it's just the kind of the way it goes.
And I think as we get deeper into the series and more things have happened behind us and are less in front of us, that we'll be able to weave some of those more plot points in that you're asking for a lot easier, because we're going to be like, hey, you remember that thing that happened 3 books ago? Well, look at this, you know?
Absolutely.
Even in this book, it's going to come up that we're going to be able to weave just the beginning of the book to the end of the book back a lot stronger. This is kind of where this third book is kind of where she really gets integral integral in that storytelling. So hopefully we can deliver that for you, because I'm excited for that too.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree, and I'm super excited to be able to do that. Now, Drea, I got a surprise for you, because I did not even tell you this, but just recently was at Dragon Con and actually met a longtime listener to a lot of my podcasts, one of them obviously Outpost, but he said that his 10-year-old daughter loves the show, and she actually gave me a present, which was so awesome. It was a flashlight, a Superman Lego flashlight.
Oh my gosh, how amazing is that?
It's awesome. And she wrote a letter. And
will you read it?
I'm going to read it to everyone.
Yes.
Now, no names. So just,
we'll just call her Supergirl.
Supergirl, yes. Dear Matthew Rushing, I love your podcast. You do such a good job on describing the little details I would otherwise have missed. I'm a huge Harry Potter fan. I have all the books, a wand, robes, a cauldron, a deluminator, a golden snitch, a time turner, and the game. Your podcast helps me make my collection complete. And because my parents won't let me rate your podcast on my iPad, I will do this. 5 stars. And she legitimately put 5 stars on there.
Oh my gosh, that's the cutest thing I've ever heard.
I know. And she says, thank you for making such an awesome podcast. And then since we were at Dragon Con and she wasn't there, she said, P.S. I wish I could be there.
Aww.
Isn't that great?
Supergirl, you made my day.
Yes.
You made my day.
Thank you
so
much.
That was so kind.
You know who you are. And we wanted to say thank you so much. It really does mean a lot to us that people are really loving the show, that they're sharing it with people. I can't tell you how many times in the last few weeks I've been hearing that people are telling all the Harry Potter friends about it. So that's wonderful. And, continue to do what Shan MD did and others have done, which is rate us on iTunes. That's really the best way for people to find us, share us on social media. We are on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. You can find us there. You can tweet out our shows when we tweet it out, retweet them and everything. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty, where you can share our show posts, talk to us about the show. And of course, if you would like to email us, feel free to do that. Go over to thenerdparty.com, where you can check out all of the fabulous shows that we do here on the network. And you can write us, like I said, that email at thenerdparty.com/contact. Choose Outpost, and that'll come to Drea and I. So,
and we can give you a wicked nickname like Supergirl and read your
email
aloud.
So the last time we left Harry Potter, he had just blown up his aunt. He had stormed out the door with all of his stuff. And 10 minutes later, he finds himself alone in a dark street.
Yeah, it's real sad. Although I can relate to the feeling of just storming out. It was a very drama queen moment he had there.
Well, I mean, who wouldn't have that kind of moment? You know,
this... Who blames him? I mean...
I don't. Absolutely
don't. I don't either.
You know, this chapter, of course, is chapter 3, The Night Bus. And, you know, one of the things that I thought was so interesting in this chapter, and it really here at the very beginning, Drea, you know, Harry is so worried about the fact that he's broken the decree for the restriction of underage wizardly. And he feels like he's done it so badly that he's surprised he's not being arrested at this very moment. And it struck me how scary it has to be him at this exact moment, because he doesn't understand enough of the wizarding world to kind of know that people don't get arrested for blowing up their aunts.
Well, you also have to remember the context that, like, the last year he went to Hogwarts, you know, Dobby dropped a cake and did magic in his house, and he got, like, a warning letter about that that basically said if he did it again, he would be expelled. So he's got, like, context for being really worried, too, you know? So I mean, I've definitely been that kid who was, like, panicked that they were going to get in, like, loads of trouble for something that totally is insignificant now that I look back on it. But, you know, that not understanding the context of what you did just again goes back to show his age. Like, he's 13. He's only been in the wizarding world for a couple of years. He has no idea, like, that people probably do things like blowing up their aunts on accident all the time.
Which, you know, it harkens back to make that connection. You know, we remember from the first book that Harry has done this kind of stuff before, you know, and all underage wizards do it when, you know, something happens that they can't control and the magic kind of just spills out of them. And this is really one of those places because, you know, at that point, Harry didn't have his wand with him. So it wasn't like he was trying to do magic. It just happened, you know, and this is one of those places. But I do think it's really interesting because as he's trying to figure out what he's going to do, he's like, well, I guess, you know, I'm going to be expelled, so a little more magic can't hurt. And, you know, he lights up his wand and his plan is, well, I'll levitate my trunk and I'll put it on my broom and then I'll fly to the leaky cauldron and I'll get all my money. And then, well, I guess.
Then I'll make a run for it.
Yep. So, you know, which
I love his really like funny. Outlaw. I'm going to live on the edge of society, like, approach. It's so, in the book, it's just so extreme. He literally is, like, going to go live with the wild beasts in the forest or something. Right. I don't even know.
Well, and it's so, it's one of those places where you can see how alone Harry feels at this moment. And again, part of it's not having that understanding of the wizarding world. And kind of the rules that guard kids of this age and everything. And really, it's that loneliness that Harry feels. And I think it's that sense of loss of family because he thought about talking to Ron and Hermione, like, but he doesn't have Hedwig at the moment because she's not around. And two, they've been off traveling, so they're not even in the country. And three, he's like, well, I mean, they're not going to want anything to do with me after this. I mean, it's just too much. And so.
No, actually, he says that they would still help him. He doesn't know what they could do.
Right.
But,
yes.
You know, they'd still help him, but he's just got no way to get a hold of him.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right.
And he wouldn't want them to leave Hogwarts and all that stuff. You know, yeah. Like he would want them to keep going on with their lives. But he also knows that they're like the only people he knows who would mm-hmm. help him. Which is funny because I'm sure Hagrid would help yeah. him too if he thought about it. Like, Hagrid's probably been in Harry's shoes. So, but yeah, I feel like that's something we've all been able to relate to. And I think this is one of those first moments where she kind of touches on one of her her favorite themes. Well, not favorite, but her most valued themes throughout her series, which is depression, and that she suffered through so much of that and been through that herself and has really used the books to sort of convey that. it touches on that like complete and utter feeling of hopelessness. Like he doesn't have anybody or anything or any option. And he's alone in the dark. Like, I don't know a better analogy than one she gave you right there for how, anyone who's ever suffered with any form of depression as a teenager, as an adult, anything can totally relate to that feeling of like, I've hit rock bottom and I don't know what to do.
Well, and at the same time, on top of all of that, he feels like he's being watched. So he lights his wand up with Lumos and feels like he's seeing these big glowing eyes and he has no idea what it is. And in that moment, he's knocked back because a huge bang happens and out comes this three-decker purple bus. So I like what you're saying there, that before the bus comes, not only is it dark and scary, but it feels like something creepy is watching him, which is kind of the way, in a lot, having had depression myself, that's somehow how it feels, you know, like something just out.
Everyone's
to get
watching
you.
Everything you do.
Yes.
But you're still so ultimately alone. Like, it's the weirdest feeling because I agree and understand.
Yeah. Well, I love, you know, this is one of the places where I feel like her imagination just kind of runs wild. And I love the night bus. I just absolutely love the night bus and the fact that it's this three-decker bus. It's got a guy driving
violently
it.
Purple.
Yes, yes. A guy with huge Coke bottle glasses driving it.
In an armchair.
Exactly, in an armchair.
I want my driver's seat to be an armchair now.
Yes.
I have unrealistic expectations of the world.
Yeah, I drive in a Lazy Boy. And the fact that there are no seats in this bus, there are only beds on each level where people sleep somehow. Like, I don't know how they sleep with all the noise that this bus seems to make.
And apparently Harry doesn't either.
Yeah, I love that. And we meet Stan Shunkpite as well for the first time, who is the conductor. He gets on the bus and he takes him. He's like, can you take me to the Leaky Cauldron? And they're like, yeah. And this is also the interesting thing, too. He's scared for himself, so he gives them the name of Neville Longbottom instead of Harry Potter.
The first name that comes to his mind is Neville Longbottom. That was so interesting.
It is. I'm wondering why. Like, I wonder if it's just because he is kind of one of the first people he met. I mean, you know, Neville is one of the first people he met on the train. I don't know. And maybe it's just because Neville is the most unassuming person that Harry knows. Like,
maybe
nobody's going to know who Neville Longbottom is, right?
Yeah. And I feel like to an extent, too, maybe Harry feels a little bit like even if they did know who he was, he might be able to get away with being Neville. Like, they're both tall and similar colorings, and, you know, Neville's more, they always describe him as a rounded boy, but, you know, and Harry's like a skinny kid, but, yeah, I feel like maybe that was the first person that came to mind that wasn't Ron or Hermione, because he can't get away with being Hermione, and if he's a Weasley, and he feels like the Weasleys are known within the wizarding community, right? So he had to think of someone.
Yeah. Well, and it's great, too, because I love how Harry's like, how do the muggles not see this bus? And Stan's like, they don't listen. They don't pay attention to anything, do they? They're basically like, they're too dumb to notice us. I love that.
I do. And I love how the night bus is described in the book so much better than the movie. Like, I feel like it would have been hard to do it justice from the book into the movie. But I did really like the way that it operated, the magic behind the bus, more in the book. Mm-hmm. It felt much more magical with him describing mailboxes and farmhouses jumping out of its way and stuff, you know, versus the bus kind of conforming to the area it was, you know.
Right.
But I did find it really, really magical in the book, like very fantasy versus very brief.
I absolutely agree with you. I feel like it feels much more imaginative and fun. Like, this is just some whimsy here, which is perfect. But this is also the second time that we hear about Sirius Black and Harry gets to read the paper there with the Daily Prophet, and about how, you know, he's escaped Azkaban, and Fudge is in trouble apparently for telling the Muggle Minister for Magic, and he's like, how could I not tell him? Like,
right.
This guy's
especially
a
when you
mass murderer.
Find out he's killed 12 Muggles too, you know?
Well, yeah. And this is the crazy thing. This is where we first hear the kind of story about who Sirius is, and that he murdered 13 people with one curse in front of all of these witnesses. And it's like, the further we get into this story, the scarier this guy gets.
Way scarier than the movie. Like, way scarier than the movie.
Well, and it's, I mean, part of it's the story that they tell, you know, that he was a part of new, you know, who's group. And I love how Harry says Voldemort, and they're like, what are you saying his name for? And he's like, oh, sorry, I forgot. And he stands like, forgot? Like,
like, Neville, what's wrong with you?
Well, and the fact that the way that they describe the story is that Black is in the middle of the street. He blasts a whole street full of Muggles.
Whole city block, yeah. Or whatever, yeah.
And when they come to capture him, all he does is laugh.
Which is so creepy.
Yes.
And demented.
Yes. I mean, very, very scary. And the yeah, I think, you know, one of the things I think the movie does well is I love the moving picture on the front of the Prophet, because I feel like it's just super creepy. But the way they describe it here is just so scary. And I love that Stan's like, can we just talk about something else? Especially those Azkaban guards. They give me the collie wobbles.
I know. I do think that Gary Oldman does a fantastic job as Sirius Black in the movie. He does convey the kind of desolate, crazy pretty well. But they definitely give you more to be afraid of in the book. Like, even just in this chapter, you're mm-hmm. already pretty freaked out.
Well, and it's something that's really interesting as well, because as we keep talking about this wizarding prison, Harry keeps wondering, well, I broke the law just like Sirius Black. Is this enough, what I did, to get me into wizarding prison? And he doesn't really
know
a lot about it. We don't know about the guards yet. But he's like, from the experience that Hagrid had there last year, this seems like a place I don't want to go.
I don't know that anyone wants to go to any form of prison ever.
This one just kind of seems really bad.
He seems very clear that he definitely does not want any part in Azkaban.
I mean, yeah. And from all we know later on, obviously not a place that he would like to go. Well, I love that.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I love that he arrives at the Leaky Cauldron, and he gets off the bus, and who does he run into but the Minister for Magic?
I know, the one person he's like running from, and he's just filled with dread.
Well, and the minister's like, oh, hey, how are you doing, Harry? I'm so glad to see you. I'm so glad we found you. And they're like, wait, did you just call him Harry Potter?
My favorite part of this whole chapter is that after they find out he's actually Harry and not Neville Longbottom, they continue to call him Neville.
Yes.
That made me laugh every time Stan Shunpike when he kept calling him Neville. Mm-hmm. Like, it cracked me up. All right, bye, Neville. Great to meet you.
Yes. Well, and the fact that, you know, Harry doesn't really necessarily understand what's going on, and I really like that, you know, he kind of finally gets Fudge to explain it to him, because, you know, Fudge is talking about how worried they've been about him and so glad that they found him. You know, don't worry about your aunt. We fixed it up, that whole issue. And your aunt and uncle will let you back as long as you stay there for Christmas and Easter. And Harry's like, I don't want to ever go back there again. And Fudge, I love Fudge. They are your family, after all, and I'm sure you're fond of each other, very deep
somewhere
down.
Deep down, yeah. I like that Harry's like, he didn't even bother to correct him. He's like, whatever.
Yeah, it's not worth it. But Harry, you know, Fudge is like, everything is fine. And, you know, talking about, you know, you can just spend your time here at the Leaky Cauldron. We can get you a room here. And Harry's like, wait, I don't understand. What about my punishment?
I love that Harry couldn't understand actions without consequences. Like, most other kids or even adults who would be like, sweet, I got away with something. And Harry's like, no, I deserve to be punished. Like, I did something wrong, you know? Like, I was told I'd be punished and I want you to follow up on what you said. And he didn't buy. He didn't buy any of what Fudge was selling, you know? Like, oh, well, circumstances change. And he was like, I don't know about that. You know, he was never really... He was, like, relieved that he wasn't going to be expelled. But at the same time, mm-hmm. he also really wasn't having much of it, so...
And I think it's so interesting because he says exactly what you said earlier. You know, last year I almost got expelled and I didn't even do anything. You know, like the Minister for Magic, like I almost got kicked out and they said if I did any more magic there, I'd be, you know, expelled from Hogwarts. And it's interesting because Fudge is dancing around something that we don't understand yet. And we won't understand until next chapter.
We'll understand it more next chapter.
Right.
Yeah.
But he's saying, you know, look, the present climate, you know, we have to take things into account and everything. Surely you don't want to be expelled, which, of course, he doesn't. And then Harry, I think this is so, so smart. Harry's like, why in the world was the Minister of Magic waiting for me to arrive at the Leaky Cauldron? Is that normal for the Minister of Magic to get involved himself with underage magic problems?
Yeah, it was very astute of him. He definitely knows something's going on that no one wants to tell him. He's definitely getting the traditional politician answer, right? He's not getting a straight answer. He's being talked in circles. He mm-hmm. knows that he's not getting a straight answer. He knows there's something he doesn't know. And, you know, he's mature enough even as a young boy to know, like, just be straight with me. Like, I would much rather just know than not know. Because if you're going to come back and expel me in 6 weeks, I'd like to know, you know. But it's just so interesting how observant he is. Because as adults reading it, you're like, oh, yeah, no, I'm not buying anything he's saying. But even as a boy, and even when you read this as a child, you sort of get that same impression. Very interesting. Don't trust Fudge.
It does seem as, and Harry can tell, there's something underneath the surface that's going unsaid that doesn't add up here. And I do like that the way that the chapter ends is, you know, Harry's, the one thing he's worried about now that he knows he can go back to Hogwarts is that his aunt or uncle did not sign his permission form to go to Hogsmeade. And he asks, you know, Fudge, can you sign it?
I know, that was so funny. I just thought that was so... Well, and then he says, no, but you don't. And you think, oh, it's because it's the minister or whatever. But, like, you also get the impression that maybe there's something... There's a greater reason why he said no. It just adds to the mystery of everything else we don't understand. You know, why did he know where he was going? Why... Like, we still don't know how he knew where he was going. He just picked Leaky Cauldron or... actually, I think we do find out, but in another book.
Well, I think, you know, it does kind of make sense because, you know, the only place that Harry has resources is at Gringotts, you know? So if he was going to go somewhere, it just... For a muggle born... person who's just come into the world, it just makes sense for him to go to the one place that he knows and the one place again that he has some kind of resources. You know, at this point, you know, Harry's exhausted and he falls asleep, and it makes so much sense that he would. It's been a long day. He blew up his aunt and he ran away. He thought he saw something scary. He's been on a bus. He thought he was going to be on the run for the rest of his life. That's emotionally exhausting.
Yeah, I mean, I'd call it a night after that. I wouldn't take my glasses off before I fell asleep either, Harry.
Yeah. I've done that before. It does not feel good when you wake up in the morning. Mm-mm.
Or when you wake up and they're like half smashed into
yes.
your face.
No, it does yeah. not feel good at all. But and it's so interesting because this chapter really does set up the big plot point, which is Sirius Black on the run. And yeah. it's exciting to have them, her kind of give this away so quickly in the series and really be able to set up this menace that's going to be behind the whole book. And it just leaves me excited, you know, to see what's going to come next. And so I'm really looking forward to continuing to dive into my favorite book in the series.
I do find this book and chapter in particular, so interesting because I think we get to the meat of the story the fastest so far of all the books in this one. Because the other ones, you take a couple chapters going through the Dursley's house and this and him getting to Hogwarts, and that's usually pretty uneventful, you know, with the exception of the flying car in the last one. But for the most part, we don't really get into the thick of it quite as quickly. And right away out of the gate here, you're like intense plot points. Like we're already there. So I'm excited that it's moving. The pace is picking up too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. No, that's a really good point. I hadn't thought of that before, but usually I feel like, you know, the first few chapters, even the first four chapters, you really have it kind of dropped what the whole book is going to be about. But this one, yeah, you're getting right to the meat here. Third chapter. And you can definitely tell, as another famous Brit would say, something's afoot. And
it's the game? Is it the game? The game is afoot?
The game's afoot. I'm so excited to dive into this. And Andrea, if anybody wants to talk to you more about Harry Potter or anything else, where can they find you online?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me on Instagram under that same name. I'm here on the Nerd Party Network with John Mills talking about Star Wars with aggressive negotiations. I'm also on the Trek FM network with Chris Jones talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine on the Orb. And then I'm doing the General Geek Show, which is the 602 Club. And we're talking about all the fandoms we love there. So I hope you'll check that out. And then one more show that I am doing is called Cinema Stories. And that is where we talk about film through the lens of faith. And you can find all of those shows wherever you get your podcasts. Well, thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.